The corridor around him rang with the sounds of battle. Luke dodged, swung around the corner, and into the heat of the fray, but saw no glimpse of prey. Then from the door of a through passage, Callista yelled, "Luke, this way!" He skidded to a stop around a corner, facing the shut, black double door of what was labeled Punishment 2, over whose lintel a single small light burned amber. Nico stood against the wall, a statue of brushed silver, the only thing alive in his face, the desperate agony of his eyes. In front of the door stood a human stormtrooper in full armor, blaster carbine ready.
"Just stay where you are, Luke," said Fit Hoffman's voice. "I know you feel loyal to her, but she's a rebel and a saboteur."
"Trib, she isn't a rebel. There are no rebels anymore. The Empire is gone, Trib." Luke reached out with his mind, feeling his way to the older man's thoughts. "The Empire left you alone," he said softly. "Alone to be yourself, alone to do what you wanted. To grow a garden, to embroider flowers on your shirts.
She's a rebel and a saboteur."
Triv's voice trailed off. The light above the door blinked faster. 1559.
"Festering sky bolts!"
Hoffman wheeled and dragged on the locking rings of the doors. Luke sprang, scrambled to help him. Air hissed as the seals broke. Luke's lightsaber whined to life in his hands. Kray stood manacled between two support posts, face white with shock and exhaustion in the sheen of the grid's strange light. With the last of his strength, Luke blasted at the grid with his mind, causing it to misfire. A searing single bolt of lightning pierced the calf of his bad leg like a white needle as Kray dragged him out through the door. Kray said softly, "He was there." She wrapped her arms around herself, pulling close the thermal blanket he'd brought her, bowed her head until her cheek rested on her drawn-up knees. "He was there the whole time. He kept saying he loved me. He kept saying, 'Be brave, be brave.' But he didn't do one damn thing to stop them." "He had a restraining bolt."
"I know he had a scum-eating, motherless restraining bolt, you jerk."
She took a deep breath. And when she spoke again, her voice was perfectly steady. "He was programmed not to obey anything I said. He wouldn't even get me food." "Don't hate him for being what he is," Luke said, "or for being what he's not." She looked up at him, her eyes tearless stone. "Get out of here, Luke," she said without animosity. "I want to go to sleep." At his side, Callista said softly, I'll stay with her. Nikos, Porthman, and 3PO were in the fabrication lab outside the quartermaster's office. "Come on, Nick," said Luke quietly. "Let me get that restraining bolt off you." He fetched the tool kit from the locker on the wall, and the old stormtrooper bought one of the flickering battery lights to illuminate his work. The bolt came away from the brushed steel chest, lay thick and heavy in Luke's hand. "I love her." Nikos looked toward the doorway, his face the calm face of a droid, his eyes the eyes of a desperately unhappy man. "I say that, yet I cannot tell the difference, if there is one, between the loyalty that R2 and 3PO feel towards you. And I don't remember whether that's love or something else. I would have done anything to help her, except that since I was programmed not to interfere with them, it was literally something which I could not do. The terrible thing is that I don't feel bad about it."
"Why in the universe should you?" asked 3PO, startled.
"No reason. A droid cannot go against his basic programming. But I think Nikos would have."
"She's asleep now."
He felt her presence beside him as if she had hiked herself up to sit next to him on the edge of the workbench, booted feet dangling.
"Luke, sometimes there is nothing you can do."
He expelled his breath in an angry gust, fist clenched hard, but he did not speak for a time. Then it was only to say, "I know." He realized he hadn't known that 2 weeks ago.
"My teacher, Giannottis, used to say every student is obliged to make 1,080 major mistakes. The sooner you make them, the sooner you will not have to make them anymore. I asked him for a list. He said, thinking there's a list is mistake number four.
How long were you with him?
5 years. Not nearly long enough, but I'm recording everything I remember about Jin's teaching. They may be able to help you after you leave here.
Callista, I can't...
You can't let this battle station fall into the hands of whoever it is who's learned to use the Force to move electronic mines. She was so real. She had come back so far along the road that he would have sworn he felt the touch of her hand.
There has to be an alternative to blowing up this ship.
Not one that's foolproof.
Luke shut his eyes. Everything she said was true. Callista, I love you. I don't want you to die.
Luke, I died 30 years ago. I'm glad we had this time. I'm glad I stayed to know you.
There has to be a way, he insisted. Cray...
Cray what?
Luke turned sharply. Cray leaned wearily in the door of the office.
To turn Callista into what Nikos is? To cannibalize parts from the computers? So you can have the metal illusion around to remind you what isn't yours and can't be yours? I can do that. If that's what you want.
Cray came over to them, her blonde hair catching fire glints in the greasy light.
I should never have done it, Luke. It isn't Nikos.
He isn't human. The bench on which Luke was sitting gave a sudden, jarring lurch, and gravity drew at his belly, dizzying. Far off, they felt the humming vibration rising in the ship's bones, the drag of power shifting. Callista said quietly,
"That's it. Hyperspace."
Even before he and Chewie got up the steps of the lightless house, Han had a bad feeling about things. The Bith in charge of the Municenter Records office tilted its domed, putty-colored head in the dim shiver of the hollow field.
"I'm terribly sorry, General Solo. Her Excellency does not appear to have been in the building all day."
"I knew it, Chewie," Han said as the slight image faded. "I knew she shouldn't have gone out with R2.
The Wookiee flipped in his paw the restraining bolt they'd found on the table. The holophone blipped again. Mara Jade's slim, leather-clad form appeared.
"Got your coordinates for you."
She held up a yellow plastine wafer.
"Why didn't you tell us you were after Nublik the Slight?"
"I spent all of about 12 hours on that ball of ice, and I don't think I could finger Nublik in a lineup if he'd pick my pocket."
"He told his toady the Emperor's hand was after him. The Emperor's hand was on the planet, and he had to get out before she found him."
When she spoke, her tone was deceptively normal.
"That reptile, that son of a slime crawler, he told me I was the only one, the only hand of the Emperor, his weapon of choice, his trusted servant."
The fury that radiated from her was like the pressure dropped before a storm.
"He lied to me. He used me."
They'd never seen Mara so angry. The sheer intensity of it was frightening.
"You know what that means, don't you? It means he had her in reserve to use against me. Is she still on the planet?"
Han remembered Leia telling him of the Emperor's concubine.
"Yeah, I think so. Woman named Roganda."
Mara's eyes widened as she recognized the name.
"Oh, her."
Leia was submerged, she thought, in an ocean of green glass. Though she was sinking very slowly, the glass was shot through with light from above, and she could hear the voices of Roganda, Keldor, Garonin as they left the room.
"Administer the antidote as soon as the reception is over," Roganda was saying. "We simply haven't the personnel to keep her under constant guard. But the drug's effects aren't as unpredictable as you fear. Everything will be perfectly all right."
Keldor, Elegin, Eric,
united in some common cause.
She had to get out. The Force, she thought. If she drew the light of the Force into herself, she could see the room in which she lay on Nasdra Magrodi's bed. She breathed experimentally, drawing the force into her like a kind of strange prickly light, and stood up. Her body remained on the bed, and she stepped through the door. Immediately, she was conscious of voices and followed them to a long chamber illuminated by a ceiling full of softly radiant glow panels and six windows. She recognized a good two-thirds of the people present. Some of them she'd seen at the Emperor's court. Others, like the representatives of the Maekun Corporation and the president of the board of directors of Sinar, were of more recent acquaintance. The others were the heads of the ancient houses of the Senex sector. Lady Thiala Vandron of Carfedion, acknowledged superior among the Senex lords by virtue of heading the oldest and noblest of the ancient houses, had visited the Senate quite recently to answer charges of inhumanity and planet stripping brought against her by the High Court.
"It isn't as if we were kidnapping people from their homes," Lady Vandron was saying to Roganda. "These creatures are specifically bred for agricultural work, and Carfedion is in the midst of a severe economic depression."
"Not that they care on Coruscant,"
Lord Garanon set his glass down on the sideboard.
"Which is why, Your Highness," said Roganda, "we must deal with both the warlords and the Senate from a position of strength. We will be a power to reckon with."
Close to the buffet, a Sulistan executive spoke with Drost Eligen.
"Don't worry, Niathol,"
Eligen said.
"When the ship arrives, we'll have the nucleus of a true fleet."
"Ship?" thought Leia uneasily.
"And indeed,"
he added with malicious grin,
"once the various warlords have had it demonstrated to them exactly what Irrit can do, I think they'll be most eager to ally themselves with us."
Irrit, Leia noticed, was working the room with the adeptness of a candidate for the Senate.
"We've heard all about this ship," said Lord Vensel Picatorian. "Are you sure it's large enough to give us the power, the armament, to create our own allied fleet?"
Irek inclined his head respectfully, and the other Senex lords gathered around. "It is, quite simply, the largest and most heavily armored battle moon still in existence from the heyday of the Imperial fleet."
"And it's on its way here?"
asked Lord Picatorian. Irek smiled, smug.
"On its way here, and at our service."
Then Irek's head turned suddenly, and he moved away from the group.
"You're here. You're here, somewhere. I can feel you."
Leia turned and fled, bolting down the corridors, twisting, weaving through the maze. She felt Irek's mind filling them, searching for her. She skidded to a stop in horror as the huge, stinking shape of a hut reached for her with a quivering, prehensile tongue, copper eyes dilating and contracting with ugly lusts. Not real. Not real, but even knowing this, she turned aside. There, that corridor there. She flung herself around the corner. And he was standing in front of the door. Vader. She swung around in terror. Irek stood in the passageway behind her, the dark radiance that surrounded him seeming to pulse with lightning. In his hand, he held one of the steel balls which she had seen in the toy room. But now, with her disembodied consciousness, she saw that there were entrances to it. And within the ball itself, maze after maze of concentric, ever tinier labyrinth balls.
"Mother can't stop me," said Irek. "She won't even know."
He held up the ball, and his mind seemed to reach out into the corridor like a vast net. Leia felt herself drawn as if by a vacuum toward the steel ball, dissipating into the power of the dark side. The boy puckered his lips and inhaled, pulling her in with his breath.
"Irek!"
Roganda appeared in the corridor behind her son, her white dress gathered up in her hand as if she'd been running.
"Irek, come at once!"
He swung around, his concentration broken. The shadow of Vader vanished. Leia flung herself through the door, hurled herself to the sleeping form on the bed. With human perceptions once again, she heard Oran Keldor's voice.
"Lord Irek, we picked it up on the scanners. It's here, the Eye of Palpatine."
"Master Luke, are you quite certain this is going to work?"
"You got me." Luke was towing a small pump salvaged from a laundry room. It was not the best in the world, but at this point he was delighted to have located a pump that still worked. Very little on the Eye of Palpatine still worked. "Except the guns," he thought. "Except the guns." "How much time will it give us?" inquired Nikos, striding silently along under his load of two oil drums filled with sugar water. provided it works at all. Maybe an hour, clear?
That isn't much to check the lander and two shuttles, remarked Triv Poffman.
Cray, walking behind them with a 5-gallon bucket of sugar water in each hand, said nothing. She had said nothing while Luke outlined his plan for getting the ship cleared, and very little more during the process of cutting into the main sensors for a reading of their position and an estimate of how much time they had before the shelling of Belsavis would begin. She had watched in silence when Luke and the others had mixed the syrup with water to produce a thick, hypersweet mixture, had taken her share of it when the anti-grav sled had proven too large to enter the service corridor vent. She had moved as if every step, every intake of breath, were a chore she had to get through. And she would not, Luke saw, meet Nikos's eye.
Thank the Maker, exulted 3PO as they turned a corner and dim work lights gleamed along the ceiling overhead. I was beginning to fear this quadrant of the ship around the shuttle bays was without power at all.
The Jawas were probably too scared of the sand people to get close enough to raid it.
Luke turned down a side corridor, following the main conduit.
Yet, remarked Callista, her voice coming from beside him as if she walked close by.
The door to the main pump room was locked. 3PO convinced the lock program that a key had been inserted, and the door whooshed open. Luke hooked the makeshift power cables into the main outlets, pressed the switch, and plunged the pump's small hose into the first of the sugar water drums. They pumped, in all, close to 20 gallons of concentrated sugar water into the Sand People's water supply. Sugar, the Sand People's intoxicant of choice.
Think they'll mind if we crash their party?
Whispered Callista when they reached the top of the gangway. The noise from the shuttle hangar, which the Sand People had taken for their headquarters, was tremendous. Groaning, grunting, howling, hoops and clatters. Finally, the riot subsided. A few broken grunts and shouts, then silence.
Right, said Luke. Let's go. We don't have much time. 3PO, get the towels.
The shuttle hangar was carpeted in somnolent Sand People. Sugar water was spilled everywhere.
Swell party,
commented Luke, and scrambled painfully up the ramp into the first of the shuttlecraft, while Triv and Nikos prudently collected every weapon in sight. The gauges looked all right. Cray had woken the onboard computer without reference to its passwords, and it expressed itself ready for action.
I'll slave this shuttle to the other so Nikos can control them both, Cray said.
Master Luke!
3PO appeared in the doorway of the hangar, followed by a half dozen Tals.
Great!
Luke scrambled down from the shuttlecraft.
Tell them that without their help, I could not possibly hope to save all those here who need to be saved.
Without further ado, the Tals began to pick up Sand People and carry them out of the hold, heading for the lander on Deck 10.
You know that even with my reprogramming, that lander won't do anything but head out a couple of kilometers and hang there,
Cray said, watching them go.
It can't be steered.
That'll do, said Luke. I'll leave instructions with Triv and 3PO that nobody's supposed to open the thing until it gets to Tatooine anyway.
Cray's face softened with the wisp of a smile. You never give up, do you, Luke?
I've never seen anything like it.
Jevax flicked through another series of screens, the two technicians, another Maluki and a glum-looking Durosian, leaning over his shoulders. None of the three looked up as Han and Chewbacca thrust their way through the door and into the port's central control. The Durosian shook his head.
It has to be a malfunction somewhere in the slave relay to the bay gates themselves. All the gates couldn't malfunction mechanically at the same time.
What's going on? Han asked. Jevax looked up.
I hope you're not coming for takeoff clearance, he said.
Leia never got to the Munis Center. Do you know where Roganda Ismarin's house is?
Jevax nodded. At the chief person's suggestion, they stopped at a small apartment block to include in their party Stusjevsky, a meter-tall, dark-furred Chadra fan who worked in the Vine Coffee Gardens as a sniffer. They crossed the market square, all lights retreating into dim smudges in the hot dark.
That's hers.
Jevax looked down at Stusjevsky.
Anyone home?
The Chadra fan closed his huge dark eyes, flared his four large nostrils, and stood breathing and listening to the night. Solo couldn't see how the little creature could be sifting out the odors of a single house from all others.
But Stuszewski opened his eyes after a moment and said, "Nobody home, Chief." Chewy grumbled a little and checked the pockets of his utility belt for his wire bridging kit, preparing to make an assault on whatever security system the house might have. With startling suddenness, the door at the top of the steps whooshed open.
"I thought you said there was nobody home," hissed Han, as the four of them flattened into the shadows of an old colonnade.
"Nobody human," retorted the Chadrafan. A small form appeared at the top of the steps and paused as if intensely weary or considering what to do next. Battered, dented, covered with filth and slime, it was R2-D2.
The chamber door hissed open. Though Leia's eyes were closed, she could see Lord Garinan and Drost Elegin come inside. Garinan was carrying an infuser. The metal of the infuser was cold against her throat. She felt the rush of warming wakefulness stir her veins.
"Your Highness."
Garinan sketched a military bow and replaced the infuser in his pocket.
"Madame Roganda wishes your presence."
Roganda, Irek, and Oran Keldor occupied a small chamber one level up. A quarto-sized terminal was set up on a bench, and Oran Keldor was keying rapidly through a series of calculations and what looked like sensor reports. Irek stared at Leia with arrogant, furious blue eyes.
"I've had enough trouble from you. Now you will tell me. Why wouldn't your droid obey me in the crypts? What have you done to it?"
"You're dismissed," said Roganda quickly, signing to Garinan and Elegin. Leia saw the look that passed between them as they left. "I can guarantee you that unless you tell us what you did to your droid that enabled it to escape my son's influence," Roganda said, "you're going to be blasted out of existence in very short order, along with every living thing in Plawal, because the Eye of Palpatine is not responding to my son's commands."
"Not responding?" said Leia, startled.
"I thought your son commanded it to come here."
"I did," said Irek sullenly.
"Not exactly," corrected Keldor. "By tapping into the strength of the Force, Lord Irek was able to reactivate the relay and bring the battle moon here, where it will be close enough for him to control its onboard programming directly."
He cleared his throat uneasily and avoided both Roganda's eyes and Leia's.
"The thing is, Princess, the Eye of Palpatine was originally programmed to destroy all life on the planet Belsavis."
"Because the Jedi were here," said Leia steadily. She looked across at Roganda. "You were one of the children here, weren't you? It was your family they were attacking."
"We change with the times, Princess."
"We have very little time," said Keldor. "The Eye of Palpatine will be in range of this rift in a matter of 40 minutes.
"Now," said Roganda to Leia, "what did you do to your droid?"
"I didn't do anything. After his attempt on our lives last night, he had to be rewired."
"But that can't be the reason," Irek faced Keldor. "Nobody rewired the Eye."
"That we know about," Keldor glanced at his sensor screen. "It's just possible that enemies of the New Order did learn what the relays were supposed to summon, and did get a saboteur on board."
"Can you fix it?" Roganda put a hand on her son's wrist. "Take a ship up there and disable the mission command center?"
"Of course I can." "And if you can't," Leia snapped sarcastically, "I suppose you figure you'll be safer up there on the ship."
Roganda's eyes met Irek's.
"I blew out the central servo on the landing silos," said the boy. Then defensively,
"You told me to."
"The Alevandron ship is still on the ice pad. Bring that."
Roganda paused, considering Leia for a moment.
"Bring her. If you can't get that battle moon disarmed, we're going to need a hostage."
Irek's lightsaber flashed out. He brought the blade toward Leia's face.
"And you better not try anything, because I don't think we need a hostage that badly."
"I warn you, madam," panted Keldor, hurrying at Roganda's side. "The gunnery computer was a semi-independent entity from the central mission control computer. The will, if there's been a problem with the will itself, it may not even let us on board, much less permit us into the central core."
Suddenly, Lord Garinan appeared down the corridor, blaster in hand.
My lady? What?
They're deserting you. Running out. That battle moon's going to blow the daylights out of this place, and they're taking off in the last ship.
After an endless second of staring into Raganda's white face, Garinan said softly,
You faithless drab. And with his free hand brought up his comlink. It was the last conscious movement he made.
Irek stepped forward with preternatural lightness and severed him right shoulder to left hip, the lightsaber cutting flesh and bone like a hot wire passing through clay. Leia stretched out her hand, Garinan's blaster flying free of his dying grasp and into her palm. Then she plunged down the nearest corridor.
Kill her! She'll tell the others!
She ducked through what she thought was another passageway and found herself in a long room whose single bay window looked out into the darkness, and a hanging bed of vine coffee plants gleaming with work lights not 3 meters away. Leia squirmed through the window to the minimal rock of the sill, grabbed a handful of vine, and swung. The vine jerked and gave half a meter under her weight, but somehow the huge steel basket of the bed was safely under her. She grabbed a support cable and clung. She knew she shouldn't look down, but did. A swirling sea of fog broken by dark trees and the fragile lamps of a sunken city. A tremendously long way down. Lightly, she ran along the duckboard that stretched the length of the bed. The supply station affixed to the cliff wall seemed impossibly far away. The steel gondolas that supported the hanging beds were 10 or 12 meters by 6, filled with earth and overflowing with the heavy, thick-leaved coffee or silk vines. Narrow catwalks ran between the beds, little more than chain ladders on reels that extended or contracted as the beds were raised and lowered. The bed jarred, shook, swayed. Turning, she saw Irek had swung from the window as she had and was running lightly down the duckboards to her, lightsaber shining in his hand. Leia fired her blaster and missed, the boy ducking nimbly and vanishing among the vines. Leia raced to the next catwalk and scrambled along it headfirst, though it was pointing slightly downward to a silk bed a few meters below. Irek cut the catwalk. Leia dropped the blaster and grabbed tight as the chain ladder plunged sickeningly down. The jerk of it reaching the bottom of its arc was terrifying, and it took all her courage to release her death grip enough to begin climbing, but she knew she was a sitting target.
"I've got her!"
she heard Keldor yell. A bed swept down out of nowhere like an out-of-control freighter. Leia crushed herself flat, and the gondola slashed by half a meter over her head. Then the bed she was on was moving faster and faster, swaying wildly as it swooped around corners, raising and lowering.
"Here! Over here!"
Keldor yelled. The moving bed lurched, stopped, and reversed its direction. She could see Irek standing up on another bed, lightsaber burning like amber flame in his hands. Fog was everywhere. Something huge and dark loomed out of the mist above her. She felt the jolt of someone landing on the bed, a heavy rustle of feet in the vines, then...
"Don't move, princess. I'm not very good with this, but at this range, I'm not going to miss again."
The moving bed lurched out of the fog. Oran Keldor, blaster in hand, stood at the other end. Suddenly another garden rose up from below them, missing them by less than a meter, and from its rim, Han Solo launched himself into the vines at Keldor's side. Both that bed and the one Han had ridden swung in another direction, heading along the track toward the vine-festooned supply station, where Leia could see Jevax and Chewbacca standing at the controls. Irak yelled,
"No!"
And Han, who had twisted the blaster out of the astonished Keldor's fist, shouted,
"Run for it, Leia!"
Instead, she strode over through the vines and delivered a smashing blow with a vine stake to the back of Keldor's head as he struggled with Han on the edge of the bed. Keldor staggered, reeling. The scream of terror of Oran Keldor, architect of the Death Star and sole surviving technician of the Eye of Palpatine, echoed as he fell in the ghostly broil of fog. And when Leia and Han gained the safety of the platform, all trace of Irek was gone. With the closing of the shuttlecraft door behind the last contingent of aliens, the hangar seemed profoundly silent.
Beyond the magnetic seal, the blue-white curve of Belsavis flung back a cold light.
The lander's going to be launched first on automatic, Luke said. Once it gets clear of the magnetic field, Blue Shuttle will go. Triv, I'm putting you in charge of Blue Shuttle in case there are any problems, but the controls are slave to Red Shuttle's console. Nikos will pilot both crafts from there.
Luke drew a deep, shaky breath.
Cray, there's an escape pod at the end of the corridor outside the gunnery deck. Once I make it to the top of the inclusion grid shaft, you get to that pod and get out of here. I think there'll be time.
I thought I was the one who was going up the shaft, said Cray softly.
He shook his head. I could never make it to the pod. I can use the force to help misfire the grid, and I think I have the strength to levitate to the top. Once I'm in the central core, I'm going to try to cripple the guns rather than blow up the ship.
No, said Callista.
Callista, I can't
blow the reactors, Luke.
None of the others spoke, but Luke was conscious of Cray's eyes on his face, knowing in a way that none of the others did what he was going through.
I love you, Callista.
And I love you. Thank you for bringing me back this far. He straightened up as if some terrible burden had fallen from him.
Nikos, 3PO, Triv, get ready for launch. Cray, I still want you to be the one who stays below, the one who gets out of here.
He turned in time to see her take a stun gun from the holster at her side.
The blast smote him like the blow of a club, hurling him into darkness.
Drost Illigen, Lady Theala Vandron, and a motley gang of private guards, secretaries, and corporate representatives were assembled in the room from which Leia had jumped to the first of the vine beds. They rushed to the window at the sight of the approaching bed. Chewie flung out a coil of ladder. Half a dozen hands caught it and anchored it for Han and Leia to cross. R2-D2 was between Lady Vandron and one of Roganda's thugs, rocking back and forth. As Leia swung through the window, Drost Illigen, a gentleman to his bones, held out a hand to help her descend. She said, "You've been betrayed, all of you. When Irek discovered he couldn't control the eye of Palpatine, he ran for it, him and his mother." They looked at each other. "The Eye of Palpatine is going to start bombing the planet any minute, so I suggest everyone go as deep as they can into the tunnels."
"The creatures in the crypt," began the athletic-looking Lady Carbonyl.
"Have no direction without Irek's will," said Elegin.
He glanced over at Han and Chewbacca.
"After you, Your Highness, we may still be able to catch them before they take off."
They encountered, in fact, two or three of the wretched ex-smugglers and ex-hustlers wandering the passageways farther from the inhabited areas, where the thermo-vent ran out under the ice. But as Elegin had said, without Irek's will, the things ran shrieking from the lights borne by Han, Leia, and the various infuriated aristocrats who strode in their wake. Without Irek to interfere with sensor tracking, thought Leia, they should be able to round up those miserable guardians and get them help. The hangar door was open, the lights from within shining on the snow that blew across it. All around the ice pad, snow was scattered in the characteristic quintuple starburst pattern of a Tiki Arts lifter's. Except for Lady Vandron's two crew members, tied up with engine tape in a corner and shivering with cold, the hangar was quite empty. Leia wrapped her arms tight around herself, shivering as the wind burned her unprotected cheeks. "At least we'll be able to warn Admiral Ackbar," said Leia quietly. "Irek's power over mechanicals can be circumvented if minor changes are made in the schematics. He can do damage on any ship that hasn't been warned, but we can get the word out." A burning pinpoint of white light flared suddenly in the dim sky, faded, then swelled suddenly to a monstrous glare. Han said,
"What the..."
"I don't know," said Leia. "But that was way too big for a Tikiar. It has to be the Eye." "Luke, forgive me." He rolled over. There were soft hootings in the semi-dark, and a white, fluffy entity came and bent over him, urging him down with padded black paws. Somewhere close, the Jawas chattered, yellow eyes glowing in the dark. He could see one end of the shuttlecraft jammed with old droid parts and stormtrooper helmets. The hollow of Callista's face appeared dimly in the bunk above his head.
It was my idea, mine and Cray's. I was afraid, we were both afraid, that at the last minute you'd try to settle for less than complete destruction of the Eye of Palpatine, that you'd try to play for time to take me off the ship. I'm sorry that I made your decision for you.
Her image faded out, and Cray's appeared. She said,
with me in the gun room using the Force against the inclusion grid, I figure it's just possible for a droid to make it up the shaft. And a droid could take a few hits and still be able to function. Nikos agreed to this.
Nikos' face appeared beside hers.
Luke, you know I was never more than a substitute. A droid programmed to think and remember and act like someone Cray wanted very much to keep. But I'm not the living Nikos, and I know I never can be.
Nikos is on the other side, Luke,
said Cray softly.
I know it. And Nikos...
She half smiled.
And this Nikos knows it. Remember us.
The images faded, leaving only Callista's voice.
Forgive me, Luke. I will love you, always.
From the starboard portals came a blazing burst of white.
No!
Luke flung himself to his feet. Then the explosion, like the shattering destruction of the world. Mara Jade picked them up in the Hunter's Luck very shortly after that. I came out of hyperspace almost on top of that tiki arc, she said, as she and Leia helped Luke from the lock of the red shuttle into the Luck. Behind them in the shuttle, Chewbacca was snarling furiously at the assorted Gamorreans and Jawas seeking to follow. C-3PO, who'd more or less piloted both shuttles away from the spreading cloud of ruin that had been the Eye of Palpatine, had remained with the Wookiee to translate, explaining in a number of languages that everything was under control and they'd all be taken care of. Mara went on, the Tikiar was heading up the corridor like it had a pack of void demons on its tail. If I'd known who it was, I'd have taken a shot at them. You all right, Skywalker? She keyed the entry to the Luck's main lock and regarded Luke worriedly as the air cycled in. I'll be fine, he said, knowing it was a lie. There's a pretty good company med center in Plawal, Mara was saying as she eased him down the corridor to one of the small cabins.
Whoa, what do we got here?
He heard Han say from the bridge.
We got a signal in the debris field. Escape pod, it looks like.
Luke opened his eyes. Cray. While Mara went off to the bridge to work the tractor beam, Luke insisted that Leia help him up so that he could go down to the hold when they brought the pod in. The lights on the hold door cycled green and the door hissed open. Luke slid back the cowling of the pod. Under it, she lay in the coma-like sleep of partial hibernation, hands folded over her belt buckle. Despite the bruises that still marked it, her face was so calm, so utterly different from the brittle, haggard features of the woman she had become, that he almost didn't recognize her. She was a different woman. A different woman. Luke thought, no. She drew a long breath and opened her eyes. They were gray. No. Then she laughed, a soft and wondering sob, and he flung his head back and everything rose within him in a single wild whoop of triumph and joy. Yes, he yelled, and they were laughing and crying, both hanging on to each other, and she was saying his name over and over again as if she couldn't believe that such things were occasionally permitted by fate. It was her voice, and nothing like Cray's at all. Nikos went up the shaft, said Callista softly. He was hit badly, most of his systems cut to pieces. He could feel himself shutting down as he set the core on overload. Cray said to me that she wanted to stay with him, to cross to the other side with him. She said if she couldn't be with the one she loved in this world, at least someone could. She said to thank you, Luke, for all you tried to do for her and for all you did. He kissed her like the breath of life coming into his body after long cold, and stumbled trying to get to his feet on his bad leg. Laughing shakily, holding on to each other for support, they got to their feet and turned to the doorway. Leia?
Han, Mara, this is Callista.
Everything has to be paid for. Callista passed her hands across the surface of the glass sphere, where the pink-gold liquid glittered in the glow of the lamp. She crossed the room to the flat rectangular tank with its thin layer of yellow sand, moving with an odd, graceful awkwardness. The masters used to call up images in the tank like hollows. They'd project their thoughts through the sand. The sand is what makes it easy for a child to do the same. I wish I could show you. It had been last night when Leia, Han, and Callista had come down to the toy room that they'd discovered that Callista was no longer able to use or touch the Force. Luke had been taken to the Brathflen Corporation's med center to spend most of the night in the glass tank of Bacta fluid. It had occurred to Leia that Callista would know the nature and uses of the toys in the vaults beneath Plett's house. Only when Callista had attempted the first, most simple demonstrations of the toys had the truth become clear. "The Force is something that's been in me since I was small," she said to Leia. "I never thought there would be a time when it wouldn't be a part of me." "What will you do now?" Leia asked softly. Callista shook her head. "I don't know." "Sometimes there is nothing you can do." Luke remembered the words Callista had said in the darkness of the Eye of Palpatine. That, too, was the wisdom of the Jedi. Maybe the hardest wisdom he'd heard. She sat on the bench by the tower, gazing out into the shimmer of mist and the gray shadows of trees. She turned her head as if he'd spoken her name. "Are you all right?" "I should ask you that," he said. She had been at his side when he'd drifted to consciousness close to dawn. Later, when he'd waked fully, she'd been gone. Leia had told him what had taken place in the toy room, but it was as if he had known it already. He wondered if he'd been there, seen it in some now-forgotten dream. Certainly, when she'd wept silently on his shoulder in the pre-dawn darkness, he'd known what it was she had lost. She shook her head, not in denial, but in a kind of wonderment. "I keep thinking about Nikos, about being another Corellian of the same name." His head close to hers, Luke could see the brown color already visible at the roots of her corn-silk hair, and knew that within a few months the whole would be that heavy, malt-colored mane he remembered from visions and dreams. "I keep wondering if I shouldn't have stayed where I was." "No," said Luke. "No. It isn't the Force in you that I love. It's you. Will you come to Yavin 4 with me?" When she hesitated, he said, "You don't have to make up your mind now. But your knowledge of the old methods of teaching, the old ways of training, would help me." The gray eyes met his.
"I love you, Luke, but it's not going to be easy."
"We have time," he said. "There's no hurry."
"But there is, and there will always be, my love for you."
They were still clinched tight in each other's arms when Han and Leia, Chewie, 3PO, and R2 appeared. Leia said softly, "Let them be for a while."
"He can kiss her on the ship," said Han good-naturedly. "Jevax has finally got the landing silos repaired, and we got those gizmos from the toy room loaded up for the kids, and I, for one, want to get off this rock before something else happens."
"This would be advisable, Your Excellency," added 3PO. "Admiral Akbar did mention concentrations of Grand Admiral Hask's troops in the Atravis sector, and we have no idea where or with whom Roganda and her son have taken refuge. Given the necessity of implementing small but significant changes in the schematic of every ship in the fleet, or of finding adequate shielding where schematic change is impractical, it would perhaps be expedient to get underway as soon as we can."
"You're right." Leia looked around her for the last time at Plett's house, or the ruin that the Empire had left of it. The echoes of its ancient peace filled her. Somewhere she seemed to hear children's voices again singing that old song about the Queen and her magic birds.
"Hey, kid," Han yelled to Luke, "we're blowing out of this jerkwater rock. Can we drop you any place?"
The
The couple on the bench looked at each other, their faces reflecting a curious kinship, for a moment more like brother and sister than lovers, people who have known one another for lifetimes past. Then Callista said, "Yavin 4, if it's on your way." Han grinned. "I think we can manage that." Luke and Callista crossed the grass to them, hand in hand. This is Anthony Heald. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars: Children of the Jedi by Barbara Hambley. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Howell. Abridgment by Trebby Johnson. Star Wars: Children of the Jedi is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1995, all rights reserved. The book Children of the Jedi is available wherever Bantam books are sold.